Follow us on Twitter at RTE Mooney.
Now, before you do anything else, I want you to stop everything you are doing because I need to tell you something.
Stop, whoa, yes, wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait,
wait, Mr. Postman.
Oh, I love that song. Poor old Karen Carpenter to be taken from us so young. Anyway, in the age of internet and email, snail mail delivered door to door by a nice man or woman from on post is no longer the bulk of the written communications we receive. And when we do get letters by post, more often than not, we rightly or wrongly fear that they contain bad news or bills. So you can imagine my surprise the other day when I received a missive from the Road Safety Authority. I opened it with no small degree of trepidation. How on earth could I have incurred more penalty points on my license, I wondered, when anyone who's ever sat in a car with me knows that I drive slower than the aforementioned snails. So I ripped open the envelope and gingerly removed the paper inside, and instead of discovering that I'd been caught unawares by speed cameras and duly punished, the RSA was in fact contacting me to tell me that my existing points had been expunged, extinguished, legally expired forever. Will I read it to you? It comes on with a notification of removal of penalty points and the reference number, and it says, "You are hereby notified, pursuant to Section 4 of the Road Traffic Act 2002, that the two penalty points endorsed on the entry in the licence record relating to you following payment of a fixed charge in respect of an alleged offence, exceeded 60 kilometres per hour limit, which occurred on the 12th of December 2013, have been removed. Total penalty points now on your record, a big fat zero." Didn't say the big fat zero, just says zero. I added the big fat zero in because I was so thrilled. I only had two penalty points. And to be honest with you, at the time I wondered, did I really exceed the speed limit at all? But you know, when you challenge these things, you get yourself into a whole heap of a mess. Anyway, it got us wondering here in the office about what unexpected good news or surprises you might have had through the post in the past week or two. Tell us all about it. We want to hear your story. Email Mooney at RTE.ie or text 51551. Now, let's get on with the show.
The Mooney Show on RTE Radio 1. Text now to 51551 or email Mooney at RTE.ie.
Ah, yes, the ability to sing along or hum a tune, one of life's little joys, wouldn't you agree? Stephen Sondheim, the genius composer of musical theatre, once said, "If I cannot fly, let me sing." And that just about sums it up for many of us. But for others, it's much more than that. Take professional singers, for instance, who often go to great lengths to protect their voices. Barbara Streisand has been quoted as saying that the unique sound of her singing voice is down to a deviated septum. Sounds very uncomfortable. And that despite being tempted by plastic surgery, a nose job could destroy her voice and ruin her career. Julie Andrews of Mary Poppins and Sound of Music fame had career-ending surgery to remove throat nodules in 1997. Her voice has never recovered. So, it was with great reluctance that our own Niamh Kavanagh went under the knife last week to have surgery on her thyroid. Niamh has been singing since she was a child and will be familiar to most of you as our representative in the Eurovision Song Contest, not once, but twice. Won it once in Mill Street in County Cork. She was a lead and backing vocalist on the film soundtrack of The Commitments, and Niamh remains one of Ireland's hardest working and most successful singers. I caught up with her on Wednesday in one of her favourite cafe haunts called Who's in Jordanstown near her home in Northern Ireland.
Niamh,
get your lips off me for heaven's sake.
Darling, can't help myself.
Drag me all the way up here. to Jordanstown and Newton Abbey.
Yes, only down the road. I'm only 10 minutes up the road. And look at the beautiful loch behind us. All the lovely water that I look at every day.
That's Belfast Loch there behind
us. It is, the very one, the very one.
To really explain, we're sitting with the most spectacular view in a restaurant. Whose restaurant is it?
I don't know. Would it be whose, maybe?
Whose restaurant? They're not paying us any money for this. But the view is really beautiful here, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's gorgeous. I live quite close to the water here, to the loch, and it's so lovely to kind of come out and just see the water every day. I think I'd find it very hard not to be near water every day now.
Are you a walker or a sailor?
I'm a walker. I've never really done the sail, and I'd have to eat too many quells, I think, for that. And when I was very young, I took an overdose of quells. I was an accident-prone child.
What are quells?
Quells are travel sickness pills. I ate nearly a full box when I was about three.
Never heard.
I know, and I had to get my stomach pumped and everything when I was about three. My poor mother, her nerves were shot the entire time when I was young.
And why were you taking them in the first place?
I wasn't. They were just there.
Why did they have them at home?
I can't remember. We were possibly...
Being a ferry to Liverpool.
Very possibly going to Liverpool.
Like all dubs.
Exactly right.
You remember, of course, there was the ferry that went to the Isle of Man as well.
The Isle of Man.
The Manx ferry.
Never went to Manx now.
I never went myself. Either.
I've been many places, but not Manx, unfortunately.
Yeah, not even for the TTs.
No, not even that. But I did do Holyhead a lot. And especially even later when I started gigging, and then you go over in the big Mercedes van and then drive down to what we used to call County Kilburn in London. Because there's so many Irish there.
Can I tell you, if you had a little bit of property in Kilburn, you'd be smiling now.
I would be guffawing, actually, yeah. Now if I had a bit
because
of property there.
My impression of Kilburn when I was a kid as well rough and ready, let's say.
Yeah, small bit. Because it was pretty central as well, you see. So it's where people used to go, you know, when they moved over. We used to laugh about them because we used to play the National Ballroom there, which was one of the big ballrooms.
Yeah.
And we were at the tail end of the show band thing. So we kind of came in and did this gig. And the National Show Band, or the showroom, and they would all come in and you would nearly say that they had their Wellingtons and a little bit of the muck off the hills on it still, you know. Because they'd have come over to London to work and then, but they had just literally come from the hills, like, sort of thing. So.
Now, who's we?
We, well, that would have been the band I was in at the time called Off the Record. That's way back in the early days. I did a couple of years in a band called Runaway, which was more based in Dublin.
Yeah.
And that would have been like weddings and stuff of that. And then we did an odd gig in the Harp Bar on O'Connor Bridge.
This is pre-Eurovision Song Contest.
Pre-Eurovision, quite pre.
But you were still working at the time in the bank.
Oh, yes, of course. I had proper jobs then to keep my mother and father happy.
You were the most famous banker in Ireland at one stage.
I know. And many more bankers have been more famous since for not such great reasons.
Not the right reasons,
that's very true.
Because I remember the time you won the Eurovision Song Contest and didn't the bank take out an ad and say, done, Niamh, and everything.
Uh-huh.
And I remember people, friends of mine, saying, God, the bank are great, aren't they?
They're great, yeah. They were really great. They said,
seriously.
I know.
And they're letting her go off and do her thing and everything.
I know.
Fantastic.
You had no idea how much publicity they got out of that. It's ridiculous.
Melted.
They actually put in an ad, which was really funny, actually, because I was standing doing this, get my makeup done by Evelyn Lunny, who was brilliant. Me and her were great friends.
Yeah.
And she was doing my makeup the morning of the Eurovision. She says, did you see that ad in the paper there? And it said, AIB says, good luck, Niamh, take Monday off.
Yeah.
Right? And then on the Monday, they had take Tuesday off as well.
But tell me, do they ever give you a bonus or anything like that? Because they got so much out of it.
Yeah, no, they allowed me to take a few years off. They didn't. They never.
But they didn't pay you a salary while you took those years off.
Not at
so you
all.
Never became an ambassador for the bank.
They were really supportive of you doing extra things. And to be honest with you, I worked there a long time and gigged, and they knew that, and they never interfered with
it. Well, remind everybody what you did in the bank.
I actually did many things in the bank, but I mostly worked in the departments. So I actually worked in the computer room, and I used to run the projects and all the things. I used to take the loans out of your bank account, and just that made the departments run, basically. That's what I did. So every month I would have to run the program that took my car loan out. It was a terrible temptation.
But all that time you wanted to be a singer?
I sang the whole time. I was actually gigging the whole time. I was gigging from the age of 18 and I loved it. I sang from no age. I was singing in my poor parents. I dragged them to all sorts of shenanigans because if I got an opportunity to sing, I sang. I loved it. I was singing or swimming in my teens. That's what I did mostly.
And at what stage did you start to make a few quid? Was it Eurovision or was it before that?
Well, before quid, you made all right money when you were about, going around doing a bit of gigging around. And, sometimes you're in a band that invests invests in itself, which is always a bit interesting. But
what do you mean investing?
You know, as in, you know, oh, we have to get posters done and all that sort of stuff, and then it's all the gear. Those co-op bands you got to run miles away from, but they're always fun to be involved in. I made some money, but it definitely around the time of the commitments is when it really started to take off for me, because although I was well known in the industry. Well, I was well known in bands, but when I auditioned for the commitments, then people in the industry knew me. So I started to become very well known for doing. I worked with the likes of Bill Whelan and, you know, great producers, and then people started to use me on ads and sessions. And because I had a real job, I didn't have to worry about whether I was making money or not. I just basically did any project that I really liked doing. And quite often there was money in it, but a lot of the time it was really about what I fancied doing at the time.
But then the Eurovision Song Contest came along, and the rest,
and
as they say,
the rest is
history.
History.
Showing no emotion, my feelings locked inside. Made myself an island, trying to take my heart and hide. Built a wall around me, afraid of letting go. But suddenly an open door, I never saw.
So has it been good to you?
It's been amazing. The Eurovision is like a gift that keeps on giving, because realistically, people have such a soft spot for it in their hearts, really, a lot of the time. And certainly for 93 in particular, people love the song, they love the whole thing, they love the Irish winds in general, that period of time. At the time, it wasn't considered a very cool thing, to be truthful. Now everybody says, oh, do you remember the glory days of 93? But actually, it wasn't very well regarded. I remember people gave me a lot of stick, really, for being involved in it as such, you know. But I loved it. As an experience, it's been amazing. And it's a place I visit every couple of, you know, a couple of times every year. I don't actually live there. You know, I don't live in Eurovision land all the time.
No, but you've been in it twice.
Yes, I have. And because I won it, I suppose, or was involved in a win as such, you know, the thing is, I do get wheeled out a little bit more often than other people, and I quite like that. You know, I like the fact that, you know, it allows me
You're
to
like
do...
Christmas crockery.
That is correct. And, you know, exactly, you bring me out for the good wear.
You get a few quid out of it, as you say, it's been good to you. And
yeah, and it's you know,
the fans are very loyal.
They are, and they always, it always brings you interesting places and lovely places to go and different things to do. But I couldn't live there all the time because it's, you know, I live in the real world, so lots of other things have to happen.
What do you mean you live in the real world?
Well, you see, I think there's only certain times in the year that you could live on Eurovision. You've got to live doing other things, you know, and I'm nearly 50. I can't just go out and sing the same song forever, despite the fact that that's what people like to hear. But
as a song,
yes,
It's For You,
yes,
or In Your Eyes, which did you prefer? I know which one you won with, but which did you actually prefer?
It's difficult to say, because both of them had different things for me and different stages of my life, really, I suppose. I think In Your Eyes for me. Still In Your Eyes, although I love It's For You and I still love singing it and people still love it, which is great. I really love the way people responded to it. Yeah, it's a funny one. It's a very different time in my life, so I don't know. It's about 20 odd years.
No, but you must have felt tremendous pressure when you were going back again, because, you know, you've won it. Stay away from it, because you might lose it next time. Well, you did lose it the next time. And I don't mean that in a
disrespectful
way.
No, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, I know. It's funny,
so
actually, when I talk about it now.
Were you upset? Were you embarrassed? Because it didn't make it into the top 10.
No, it didn't. No, it surely did not make it to the top 10. No, actually, I wasn't at all embarrassed. Both times I went and I sang a song that I was proud of and that I really enjoyed singing, and I think we presented it in a very strong way and was well received here. Mm. And at the end of the day, I always say to people when they say to me, you know, what about your Eurovisions? Well, I said I did two Eurovisions. I won one and I didn't win the other. And that's all that it is.
Do you consider it exceptional now? Winning the Eurovision, was that exceptional?
No, not the win itself. The funny thing is, that's not in your hands to do. Right, the truth of it is, the stars align and everybody votes just the right way for you. But the reality is, it could have just as easily happened the same as it did in Norway, that it didn't align for me. The exceptional thing is that you do something to the best of your ability, and it doesn't have to be as public as that either.
Was it the greatest moment of your life?
Well, I suppose It was a very communal moment for me, as I would say. It is a greatest moment in the sense of it's a great thing. It's a great thing to share that win. It was felt like a whole world won, which was amazing. Yeah.
Look into these eyes, hold on to these hands, believe in this heartbeat. Though you're afraid that I might break, just hold on. Shadows only haunt you when darkness crowds your heart. So let the light of my love shine bright. When I cry, it's for the lonely. When I pray, it's for the lost and strayed. When I love like there's no tomorrow, no more words to say, it's for you.
The reason I'm here today, meeting you so close to home, is because you're only a wet day after having a procedure,
a thyroidectomy. Yeah.
Explain to everybody what that is.
Well, basically, we have this gland in our body called the thyroid, which basically runs your metabolism and whatnot and all sorts of shenanigans about your life. And it's quite a common thing. Lots of people have problems with it, but they sometimes grow what they call a goiter, which is basically an enlarged thyroid. So my thyroid had grown so big that it was impeding my airways, and we had put off doing it because there are nerves that run across the front of your thyroid, and then that if they get damaged, you lose the ability to change pitch, and there's about a 20% chance of that happening. And then there's also two little nerves at the bottom, and if they get damaged, you get what they call hoarse voice syndrome. But both of those damages would mean that I would have to finish singing. That would be the end of singing for me, or certainly would severely limit me. And considering the range I have, that's generally my selling point sort of thing. So it would have changed a huge thing, part of me, not just from a career point of view, but also because from the day and ever I'm alive, I can't remember a time when I wasn't singing. And I love to sing, and it's such a human thing for me to do. It's like breathing. It's like it's such an essential part of who I am, and even how I connect with people, that realistically it would have been an enormous thing for it to happen. Now, having said that, the odds were very strong in my favour, and you know, I knew that the surgeon I was doing is the top surgeon up here who does it, and she was so interested in the whole thing and very, very mindful and nervous, actually. So, you know, so she was quite nervous about doing them, but she wanted to do it, and so we waited until we could wait no more. And but I was really starting to struggle with the breathing, so
really?
It was becoming a real problem. And over the Christmas I got what they call an upper respiratory infection, which meant I was coughing. Everybody had it. It was a terrible cough, and I was gigging a lot, and I got to the point where I could hardly take a breath, and I really struggled for a few weeks, and I couldn't seem to shake it. And it turned out because the thyroid had enlarged so much that I had such a very narrow airway that I was very high risk for it to actually close over and for me to stop breathing. So we figured that was the time. So it was within a month I was on the operating table getting it out. I got it done 7 days ago, and it's fine.
And were you nervous before the procedure that all these things that could go wrong, even though there was a small chance that might go wrong, would go wrong? Did you think you were going to be the unlucky one? Did you have any doubts at all about having this done? Or was it a case of, well, I have to have it done regardless of the outcome?
There was never any doubt in my mind that this was the right thing I was doing. There is that moment that you feel that loss, because it would be a real loss for me to lose my voice to sing. Yes, of course, I thought about it. I had to deal with it when we first started talking about it about 2 or 3 years ago. I definitely have dealt with it in my head. And I'm not saying that when I was getting wheeled down to the operating theatre that I didn't have a moment where I thought this could be the last time that I'll be able to sing. And that's quite emotional, actually. But I was very relaxed about it because I felt very positive about it. I think you need to be as positive as you can. I think positivity can be a really good thing for you in your life. And so I just kind of went, gave myself over to it, and I had faith that she was going to do a good job and that I was going to do whatever needed to be done. And actually, the wonderful thing is I'm nearly 50 now, and I understand that although singing is a huge part of who I am actually worth more than that. So, you know, even though that might have been the end of that, there'd be other things I could do.
But did you have plans? Did you think, okay, well, if this goes wrong and I can't sing anymore, I will do the following?
Yeah, I had a few things in mind, and that doesn't mean I won't do them still. There's many ways that I can work away. My husband is an architectural photographer, and we could expand that side of things because I definitely have a bit of a flair for photography. Of course, I did the cooking recently on the Celebrity MasterChef. So, if, you know, depending on how that all turns out.
And you were on last week with your dessert, bread and butter pudding.
Best ever, you know, they loved it. Actually, it's nearly one of my favourite recipes I did on the run because it's such a family thing. I don't do a lot of desserts, but it's the one that everybody requests is the bread and butter pudding, and it just reminds me of growing up. So
you think
delighted.
You could become a pastry chef or whatever, I don't know. That was one option. What were the other options?
I thought about maybe doing a book about what they call Feed the Family, Feed the Soul, which I still might do anyway. It's my basic tenet I live on. So I thought of doing a book, you know, which includes recipes and, you know, general just anecdotes from life, because, you know, I'm nearly 50 now. I've done quite a bit in that time, you know.
Do you think you're a good mother? Have you?
Well, I asked my son today. I asked my son.
What did he say?
He said, yeah, it's all right, yeah. He's 16. He's not going to say. That's about as enthusiastic as you're going to get at 16 from a boy.
So you have two boys. One is 16.
And the other is 14. They've literally two January boys, so we're just gone through birthday season, about to approach mine now, which I keep reminding them of, but they're not that.
What day is your birthday?
Yeah, it's the 13th. It's the day
of
February. Day before Valentine's.
Happy birthday.
I know, almost a Valentine baby. But you know, it's funny, am I a good mother? I'm not doing anything special, I don't think, but I have a reasonably good relationship with my kids, and I just believe in honesty and directness, and also I'm quite old fashioned as a mummy. I you know, what I make for dinner is what you have. Some days you'll like it, sometimes you won't, and I'm definite about rules, and yet I can be quite soft in other places, and I think that's just the way it is.
I'm looking at your neck. You don't wear an awful lot of makeup.
No, I don't.
And I can see the scar, but only because I'm sitting so close to you.
Sure.
And I'm looking for the scar.
Yeah.
And it's a big scar. It's right across.
It's about 15 or 20 centimetres. Like, it's a seat inside.
Are you conscious of it? Do you notice it?
Not really. Well, I'm aware of it. I'm aware of it. And obviously, because only a week later, I can feel a tug on it. And, you know, that lovely tightening when it's healing. Actually, no. Almost like a badge of honour now. I'm kind of very delighted that I've done it. And, you know, to be honest, a lot of people have these procedures done. And, you know, it's not that special to have procedures or scars. The scar doesn't bother me. It's, you know, it'd be different if it was hideous. I mean, this will go in a couple of years. You probably won't even know that it's been there. As a surgeon says, I'll put it in that crease on your neck. I'm nearly telling people I'm nearly 50 now so that they go, oh, look at your skin. You look really young.
And you keep fit and healthy.
Yes, I do, actually. I do a lot of walking. I drink a lot of water. I try and get good sleep. And I try, actually, mostly what I do is I try to get a good balance between my life and
my
work.
Well, you have to if you're still going to be gigging. So
sure.
A lot of the gigging you do, and people like you in Ireland in particular, it goes under the radar. But
yeah,
you're
gigging
quite a lot, aren't you?
Yeah, I gig all the time. I do theatres all over Ireland with a band called The Illegals, which is Eagles and Fleetwood Mac. And it's brilliant, brilliant 7-piece band. And if you like that kind of music, you're going to really love it. Really great quality. We're not trying to be them. We just do all this music that's really great.
And so are you a tribute act?
Well, I suppose we would be because of the fact that it is. But it's not the tribute act in the sense that we don't go in and dress up as them or anything like that. We just perform the music. And we do it in our own way. And I don't try to sing like Stevie Nicks, but you know, the song in your head, you hear what you want to hear. Mm-hmm. And I sing some of the Eagles songs, so it's not like I'm trying to be, you know, we're not trying to be the people, but we do reproduce the music well. But it's got its own charm. You know, it's a thing, you come and it's a whole night, we do nearly 3 hours. It's like, it's really great fun. And it's in a theatre, which is usually really great fun. So I do that. And then I always have time to do my own projects. Recently I did Menopause the Musical, which I'd never done before. I did Celebrity MasterChef. I always have other projects. And then I'm doing recording. And at the moment I'm working on an album. I've always wanted to do a kind of an acoustic style album. But I have a plan for one called The Bucket List, which is all the songs that people kept saying to me, I wish you'd record that. Or... So it's a kind of all the songs I love to sing that I may be doing gigs that I never ever have recorded or anything. So I'm thinking of doing that. And, you know, and so now that I've got the all clear from this and I feel much more control of myself, that all that will go into thing. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm 50 next year, so who knows what the challenges will be.
But there is a life for performers and artists like yourself.
100%.
On the circuit. We just don't see you on telly or hear you on radio.
Not all the time.
Well, in my opinion, enough. We don't hear it enough.
Well, thank you.
If this was in the UK, you'd have much more of an outlet there.
Yeah, well, you could do.
Huge population.
Yeah.
So much more media exposure.
True. But, you know, the other thing is, that's sometimes about me.
You feel a bit sore about it, I'm just wondering.
No, because actually sometimes that's my choice. Because generally speaking, some people are great at being out in the public eye all the time. But for me, I'm only interested in being out in the public eye if I have something to say to you.
Okay.
You know, and that's the truth of it, because I live my life like a normal person. And as do a lot of people. But, you know, the point is, I like the fact that I'm well known as a singer, which is important to me, you know, because that's what I do. That's my job and that's my passion, right? And so I don't really want to be famous for being famous. So generally I only come out and do talk about what I'm doing, you know. And so you won't often hear me expounding on the politics of the day or the things. I find that a little bit of a struggle because that's not what I'm here for. I'm here to do what I do, and I can be funny and I can be interesting.
You're an entertainer.
Yes, I am. And that's what I love. Yeah, well, I do love to do it, and I have a real passion for it. And so if I think it is relevant to me, that's what I do. And then you'll see me, I'm doing things, and you'll see that I come up every now and then, I little raise my head, and then I go away again and do my thing, and I'm constantly doing it, which is
well,
a good thing.
Well, you're on MasterChef again next Thursday.
It goes to Thursday nights on TV3 at 9
and
o'clock.
And you move into the restaurants, and we won't say too much
no,
about
I know.
People
so,
have to watch.
Oh, it's so exciting. It's really fun.
But when is your next gig? When will you be singing live again?
Well, funnily enough, I've taken a break for a couple of months because we didn't know how long it was going to recover. There was actually a real chance that this was going to take me months to recover. But as it turns out, I'm quite strong already. But I will work to build myself up again. But I'm definitely back in about mid-April. I'll start back is when I officially go back to kind of gigging around doing theatres, and then I do some jazz up in Berths and Merchant, and I do all sorts of different gigs like that. So that's all happening again from April. But a few things, projects now. And now that I'm really flying and have a bit of time, I may actually go into the studio now. This will be a good time. So that'll be my thing. I think the next time I'm going to sing will be sooner than I think.
Well, listen, lovely to meet you. Thank you very much indeed for taking the time out today.
My absolute pleasure.
And it was a lovely drive up, and Belfast Lock is looking beautiful.
Beautiful. Look at the sun on that there now. As I say up here, beautiful.
Let the light of my love shine bright. When I pray, it's for the lonely. When I pray, it's for the lost and strayed. When I love like there's no tomorrow, no more words to say. It's for you. It's for you.
What an amazing voice she has, and I'm glad she got over the surgery and she's doing very well. And thank you, Niamh, for taking the time out and speaking to me during the week. Lots of stuff coming in. Isn't it great for you, Derek, that you have a clean slate? My son had 6 penalty points, and on the day he got the letter that he was now clear was a great day, says Joanna. This Galway listener says, I disagree that you should be delighted with your penalty points now that they're expunged. If you doubt, you committed an offence in the first place. I did doubt it because I drive so slow, but you know yourself, you challenge these things, I think it costs you money to challenge them and all that kind of stuff, and then you might be found, you know, anyway. Derek, I got 2 letters last week from my property management company and a bank statement. These days, everything exists online, so I did actually enjoy the visual and aesthetic feel of getting 2 letters. It might be a 50s thing, says John in Dublin 8. You were happy to get 2 letters, a bank statement and one from your property management? But they're not looking for money. You're telling you didn't have any money. And what do you mean a 50s thing? Speak for yourself. I'm only 29.
Email Mooney at rte.ie. The Mooney Show on RTE Radio 1.
Text 51551. Hi, Derek, I'm listening to you in Glasgow. I got a card yesterday from a friend telling me her new grandson was born the day before, which was great news. It's so unusual to get anything other than official letters by snail mail now that getting this card was extra nice. Hello to all of my family in Tremor. And that's from Anne Cudahy. Another one here. Hi, Derek. I am what one calls a shopaholic. My New Year's promise to myself was not to use my Visa card in January, so I hid it away in the press. I got my Visa bill this week, and guess what? I'm very, very proud of myself, Derek. As you know, I now know, I don't need it, says Noreen. Well done to you, Noreen. Congratulations. We could all do a little bit of that. Now, I want you to cast your mind back to 1972. It was the year of Fiddler on the Roof, Diamonds Are Forever, and The Godfather.
He'll set up a meeting with someone that you absolutely trust, guaranteeing your safety. And at that meeting, you'll be assassinated.
Ben Affleck and Gwyneth Paltrow were born, the Moody Blues, Led Zeppelin and ABBA were flying high, and Don McLean topped the international charts with this classic.
So bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry.
When asked in later years what the American Pie song meant, McLean joked, it means I don't ever have to work again.
This'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die.
The Atari made Pong was the first commercially successful video game. Digital watches were introduced, and HBO launched the first television subscription cable service. The year was 1972, and the Volkswagen Beetle became the most popular car ever sold. It was also the year that British Leyland started producing the Triumph Dolomite.
Wood cappings on the doors, a convenient adjustable steering column, a complete instrument pack, and even velour seating.
When you consider what it has on the inside and what it does on the outside, the new Triumph Dolomite is a car worthy of anyone's consideration.
The Godfather trilogy was still in production in 1990, unlike the Dolomite, which only lasted till 1980. Sadly, it went out of fashion along with bell bottoms, trouser suits, and platform shoes. It was, nevertheless, a car which was and continues to be held in great affection by many people. But why am I taking you on a trip down memory lane into the 1970s? Well, recently I was driving past Northern Cross on the Malahide Road. Just before you get to Coolock, where the giant glass Tesco store is on the left-hand side, and I noticed a few cars for sale along the road where there are some caravans parked up. Now, it looks like a small halting site, but what really caught my attention was what I thought was an old Triumph Toledo for sale, and I thought, we must investigate this. So who better to commandeer than our old friend and motoring journalist Michael Sheridan? Michael, this is the car I was telling you about on the telephone.
Yes.
I thought it was a Triumph Toledo, but actually as we get close to it, we can clearly see the D on the side.
I feel the need to sort of go all ad nauseam. Well, it's actually not a Toledo, but it's very closely related. No, it's a Dolomite. Now, to those of a certain vintage, if you grew up in the 70s, you'd know this car, you'd know the shape. It's classic British Leyland boxed saloon car. So you have a box in the front with an engine, which in this case is a puny. It's either 1.3 or 1500. I'll just have to check the reg. It's got four doors, it's got wood veneer on the inside, and it's got a booted section at the back where you'd probably have enough for maybe a small suitcase by today's boot standard. It is absolutely held together by the last few drops of paint we can see on it.
There are holes held together by the rust.
There is holes as big as a Brandenburg gate in the body. Around the front, it's actually been dissolved away. And all the sills, right, the key part, you know, rust on panels you can live with, because you can remove the rust, you can put filler in, or you can patch things up. But structural things like the floor and the under part, the sill, which is the bit that runs between the wheels, that supports where your feet go, where the seats bolt onto, the sills here that connect to the floor are just completely rotted away. So this is what would need to be a nut and bolt restoration.
And a nut to buy it, perhaps, maybe.
Well, yeah, you know what? But it's of its time. It's got its original wheels. It's got all the detailing is there pretty much. But it would be a massive undertaking to take this on, to restore it. Whether you'd ever get your money back, it's a simple answer. No, you never would, because it would cost you so much to restore it. But it is of its time, and you can rest assured that this vehicle, as people go past it, if you're of a certain age, people go, oh, look at the Triumph. Look at the...
When I drove by, I thought it was a Toledo, because a neighbour across the road used to have a Triumph Toledo.
Yeah.
So they look very similar. So this come before the Toledo or after the Toledo?
This was in and around the same time. The Toledo was a poorer man's version. This came out in 72, and they made around 200,000 of these. So this was from 72 to 80. So as a British Leyland car, because we didn't have... Remember, Japanese cars were only just started coming into the country in the late 70s. So we had French cars, and we had Fords, and we had British Leyland cars. Now, the legacy British Leyland has left behind us, there's some beautiful shaped cars that we'd look at and go, oh, I love the shape of that one. It wasn't the Rover, the SD1, wasn't it just a gorgeous looking thing? But they were absolutely appallingly built. The workers, the worst of the sort of the trade union movement in the UK, that was such a cliche about people saying, look, tools down because they wanted more work and they didn't want to build cars. They really built dreadful cars, and they never realised and never saw what was coming around the corner, which was car companies coming in with better built cars at a cheaper price. And before you know it, the British industry died, and British Leyland, and unfortunately Dolomite, is a symbol of what the worst of the British car industry was. A terrible, terrible abused industry, which the government and workers, when they locked horns together, they just didn't realise what they were doing. They were just getting rid of the car industry. The car industry in the UK now is all the major manufacturers from other countries, Nissan, all of the rest, even Jaguar, all of these, they're owned by Indian companies now. So, yep, there's a wheel just barely held on. As you can see, somebody did try and spray it up to make it look like the metal was a shiny sort of silver at one stage. But you can see behind the paint and the bubbles, it's pure rust. So that thing would probably just dissolve if you tried to roll it away. Side mirrors with chrome. Little fly windows. So you have your windy down window. No electric windows here. And a little fly window in front of it, which you'd often see. I have memories of that. You'd see a cigarette being tipped out and ash being flicked. The little fly window was a great ventilation system. It just pivoted slightly, and it's, you know, maybe 12, 13 inches tall. And it was a really simple way of getting ventilation into a car. But look at the dash. We can see inside. Look at all the dials. We've got a speedometer. We've got rev counter. We've got temperature. We've got voltage. We've got fuel. We've got, I think we might even have, no, we don't have oil pressure, but we've got a clock. We've got wonderful detailing in a dash which has an inlay of wood. And you just don't see that anymore.
And that
anymore.
Big button, the hazard warning lights. Remember the big button?
Which probably should have been on all the time when this thing was driving.
I should say. And is that the choke there?
There's a choke,
just
yes.
Pull out?
There's a pull-out choke and a ventilation system which is very simple with levers. So you push it one way, it's warmer. You push it one way, it's cooler. And a nice sporty-looking gear shift there, the manual gear shift, nice and close. And this is exotic because this one had safety belts. Look, inertia reel safety belts, which were quite posh in the 70s.
But no headrests.
Or head restraints, as we should call them.
Yes,
yeah, so if you want whiplash, this is certainly going to help you get that in a crash. Wood veneer, it would need a little bit of work. You can see the lacquer's peeling off it here. But underneath that, that is pure wood. You know, none of this chemical plastic nonsense. This is wood. Chrome handles for the doors. And again, around the back, and the chrome is lifting off the chrome bumper.
The chrome bumper is working.
And then we've got the Dolomite badge and that black inset, which was quite sporty because there was a version of this called the Dolomite Sprint, which I must say I coveted. And it was even used once, I think, in the professionals. Bodie and Doyle. Doyle, played by Martin Shaw, I think he had a Dolomite Sprint in one of the early episodes because Leyland used to supply them cars. But they never knew how to deal with continuity. So they'd come up one day with one car and then the next week they'd bring a different car. And they said, what's the story? No, he's meant to have just the same car each week. So in early episodes, you will see a Dolomite Sprint being driven in the professionals. And as you can see, it's an English reg on an N plate. And I just have to Google to find out the specific year. But that was the year marker
they
had then.
The 70s
then.
Anyway.
So yeah, so this is in the 70s. But yeah, it's an absolute pile of utter rubbish. But it's fantastic at the same time.
No, it's lovely. How much do you think it would sell for?
You see, as it stands, it can't go on the road. There's no way on God's earth it would be signed off on by an engineer. So as a bit of nostalgia, it's still not at the point where it's worth anything because the restoration is going to be done by a madman who loves the car, who then at the end of it will have something which is fantastic and maybe worth 10,000-15,000 euros, something like that, when they've finished. But they'll have spent 30,000, 40,000 euros doing it.
Okay, well, the man who's selling it isn't here.
Shame.
I asked one of his neighbours and the neighbour said, no, he's away off today.
Yeah.
And he said, I don't know if it's worth much money. And I said, oh, I'm sure it could be worth a few quid. He said, he'd take 500 for it, is what he told me.
Well, if he says he'd take 500 for it, if he gave it 50 quid and said, I'll take it away today, he'd probably be glad of it.
Somebody will buy it.
No, somebody will. If you really want something and if something floats your boat and if this was your dad's car, if this was your granddad's car, the joy you'd get from restoring it, putting it back together again and then taking it out would be just fantastic. And that's the emotional side of motoring, and particularly used cars, that it's wonderfully emotive. And if you get the right thing and you bring something back with tender loving care, it's fantastic.
It's a classic.
It is a classic. As it stands, it's a classic pile of poop. But if it was restored, it would be a classic machine and it would be lovely to have. And I tell you, hipsters, oh my God, hipsters would die for this car. I could see this driving down through Donnybrook, the guy there with the really long, well-combed beard.
And he's only 20.
Yeah, and he's listening to music that he never heard the first time round. And he would absolutely adore this machine and he would look so cool. Yeah, it would bring a tear to a glass eye, the nostalgia now, just seeing this car here and the state it's in. Hopefully, fingers crossed, some kind soul will do the right thing and restore it.
Thank you very much indeed, Michael. I said earlier on that this song was released in 1972, and you are very observant because you told me it was 1971.
They are all I need to please me.
Can you tell me who sang it? If you can, text me to 51551. After the break, we'll be playing Mooney's Saturday Quiz.
The Mooney Show on RTE Radio 1.
It's Saturday. It's the Mooney Show. Time to play Mooney's Saturday Night Quiz. I love the Saturday Night Quiz because Sinead Renshaw comes into studio and I get to say hello to Sinead.
Hello, Derek.
Did you hear that ad? It said Dr. David Brophy.
I did.
No, he's a doctor. Now he can examine my bassoon. That's what I see. Good man, David.
See how it tunes. Yes, indeed.
Anyway, what's the prize this week?
The prize this week. Our winner will get to enjoy the hospitality of the Imperial Hotel in Cork.
Oh, very nice.
It is indeed. And this weekend, tomorrow in fact, the Imperial is inviting engaged couples and their families to visit their Valentine's themed wedding showcase to show off what a fabulous hotel it is for anyone who is thinking of getting married there or having a reception there. And so to celebrate this fantastic event tomorrow, the Imperial Hotel is giving our winner tonight two nights bed and breakfast and dinner in the hotel's Pembroke restaurant on an evening of their choice.
Well, that's a lovely prize.
It is indeed.
Get the train. Don't drive. Get the train if you live outside of Cork. And go to Cork if you can get a train or a bus or something and enjoy the two-night stay. Absolutely. Not have to be worrying about driving here, there, parking around, that nonsense.
No.
It's a lovely hotel.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
A lovely price. So who's player number one?
Player number one tonight is Garode Grogan, originally from Kilrush in County Clare, but now living in Dublin.
Garode, how are you?
Hey, Derek, how are you getting on?
Very nice to talk to you. Tell me a little bit about yourself, please.
Yeah, I'm actually about to run out the door and watch the Clare Cork hurling match this evening. Starts at 7, so I'll probably stay tuned to Radio 1 after the show.
I was going to say you'll be able to hear it here immediately when we finish. John Kenny will be in the hot seat with Saturday Sport Extra. Isn't that what it's called, Sinead?
It is indeed.
And we're covering all the games, so you'll be able to listen to it on Radio 1, so you won't have to dash anywhere.
Brilliant.
Are you passionate about the GAA? You are.
Yeah. Hopefully Clare can do well tonight anyway. First game of the season, so should be a good one.
Do you play for a team?
Say that again?
Do you play for a team yourself?
Not at the moment.
What, you're on the subs bench, you didn't make it, you're no good?
I finished up when I was younger, so.
Where are you from originally?
Near Kilrush.
You're living there and you're from there?
Yes.
Very good. All right, so you have 60 seconds on the clock to answer as many questions as you can correctly. If you don't know the answer, say pass, and then we move on. Your 60 seconds, Sinead is the scrutineer this evening, starts now. Who is older, Enda Kenny or Gerry Adams?
Gerry Adams.
What's the main ingredient of risotto?
Cheese.
Name this Beatles song.
What would you think if I sang out a tune?
Little help from my friend.
How many wings does a bee have?
Six.
What's the capital of the Isle of Man?
Douglas.
Which snooker player was also known as the Hurricane?
Alex Higgins.
Name this song by Irish band The Cranberries. You got
me wrapped around your finger.
What is the first name of the tennis-playing sister of Serena Williams?
Venus.
What is the tallest existing mammal?
Camel.
In which county is the town of Bundoran?
Donegal.
Who created and portrayed the characters Ali G and Borat?
Sacha Baron Cohen.
The Book of Kells was written in which language?
Latin.
What was Beethoven's first name?
Ludwig.
What is the currency of India?
Rupee.
Okay, you did really well. So hang on, don't hang up. Sinead, let's move on to player number two.
Player number two tonight is Joan Walker, originally from Waterford but now living in Dunleary.
Joan, how are you getting on?
I'm fine, Derek.
From Kingstown, as they used to call it.
From Kingstown.
From Kingstown, and then Dunleary was Queenstown, wasn't it? No,
exactly.
Kingstown was Dunleary and Queenstown was Cove.
Cove.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about yourself.
I'm retired, Derek. I was a banker originally. I'm a long time out of it now. And
are you happily retired?
I'm happily retired.
That's the most important thing. And I know you're a walker. You do a lot of walking. Do you ever walk Bray to Greystones?
Bray to Greystones, Greystones to Newcastle, And of course, I have Killarney Hill beside me.
You have. I used to do it a lot myself when I was a kid, that Brae to Greystones.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah.
Sometimes it was closed because of a little bit of rock fall.
Yeah.
Well, listen, you've 60 seconds on the clock as well. We're rushing everybody because we're looking at the clock. And your time starts now. Which province has fewer counties, Leinster or Connacht?
Connacht.
Name this Beatles song.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river.
What is a baby seal called?
Oh. Pat.
What is the number 5 written in Roman numerals?
V.
What is the biggest lake in Ireland?
Loch Ness.
What name this song by Irish band The Cranberries?
Pass.
What is the average temperature of the human body in degrees Celsius?
36.
With which sport would you associate Babe Ruth?
Boxing.
What is the name given to the fat of a whale?
Blubber.
What's the capital city of Finland?
Helsinki.
Can you tell me the national anthem of France?
La Marseillaise.
In what country is Lufthansa the national airline?
Germany.
Well done to you. Hang on, don't hang up. And Sinead, finally, player number 3 is...
Finally, player number 3 is Declan Whelan, originally from Dunleary, but now living in Delgany in Wicklow.
Declan, how are you getting on today?
How are you doing? Fine.
So, Declan, we're going to run straight into it. Are you ready?
Yes.
60 seconds, starting from now. What is the capital of Norway?
Oslo.
Which political party is older, Fianna Fáil or Sinn Féin?
Sinn Féin.
Name this Beatles song.
When I get older, losing my head.
When I'm 64.
In which country is Aeroflot the national airline?
Pass.
In what year did Elvis Presley die?
Russia. 1977.
Which Greek hero of the Trojan War had a weak spot in his ankle?
Achilles.
Name this song by Irish band The Cranberries.
Pass.
How many arms does a starfish usually have?
5.
In the Bible, what was the occupation of the apostles James and John?
Fisherman.
In computer terms, what do the letters RAM mean?
Random access memory.
Name the Greek giant who had one eye and a taste for human flesh.
Cyclops.
All right, well done to you. We'll take the break and we'll let you know how you all did over this break.
The Mooney Show on RTE Radio 1.
Thank you very much indeed. Sinead, have we got a winner?
We do indeed. Our winner tonight is Garrod Grogan from Kilrush in County Clare.
Hi, Garrod, congratulations.
Thank you.
Enjoy your weekend or whenever you go to Cork, and I hope you have somebody to bring with you. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you to Sinead. Thank you to David on sound. Our producer is Anna Leddy. Coming up right here on RT Radio 1, it's Saturday Sport Extra with John Kenny. We'll do it all again next week. See you then. Bye-bye.
The Mooney Show on RTE Radio 1.